I'm the operator with my pocket calculator.
Welcome once again to Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science community here on WCOM-LP Chapel Hill in Carrboro. This is Ernie Hood. I am a freelance science writer, and each week here on the program, we bring you cutting-edge information about what's going on in science here in the Triangle area, one of the world's leading hubs of scientific research, development, and innovation. You can email us at radioinvivo@earthlink.net, and you can access a full archive of our hundreds of past programs over the past 10 years at radioinvivo.net. The Burroughs Welcome Fund is a Golden Voices underwriter here on WCOM and Radio In Vivo. The Burroughs Welcome Fund supports excellence in science education across North Carolina. The fund believes that providing students with engaging and interactive curriculum helps to spark curiosity for careers in science, mathematics, and technology. You can learn about education grant opportunities for North Carolina schools and teachers at www.bwfund.org. Radio In Vivo is proud to acknowledge the underwriting support of our friend Mr. Steve Brockman. Radio In Vivo is underwritten by Steve for the advancement of science and education. It's also a pleasure to acknowledge the underwriting support of Dr. Bob Conder of Carolina Neuropsychological Service of Raleigh and Chapel Hill. Bob provides neurocognitive evaluations and neurofeedback for sports concussions and optimal sports performance. You can learn more about Carolina Neuropsychological Service at carolinacns.com. Radio In Vivo is also underwritten by Chapel Hill Eye Care, located at 235 South Elliott Road in Chapel Hill. Chapel Hill Eye Care provides comprehensive eye care to people of all ages. Healthy eyes for a lifetime. Chapel Hill Eye Care, 919-968-4774. And last but not least, Radio In Vivo is underwritten by the Triangle Center for Evolutionary Medicine, or TRICEM, a nonprofit center exploring the intersection of evolutionary science and medicine. TRICEM is jointly operated by Duke University, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, North Carolina State University, and North Carolina Central University. TRICEM is an incubator that promotes innovative developments in the theory and practice of evolutionary medicine by fostering cross-disciplinary collaborations among Triangle-based scholars, physicians, public health workers, and more. WCOM and Radio In Vivo thank this terrific group of underwriters for their support. This week on Radio In Vivo, we are going to get acquainted with the wonderful world of do-it-yourself, or DIY, biology, which has an active and growing group right here in the Triangle called Tri-DIY Bio. According to Wikipedia, DIY Bio itself is a growing biotechnological social movement in which individuals, communities, and small organizations study biology and life science using the same methods as traditional research institutions. Joining me on Radio In Vivo this time, we have three local DIY bio practitioners who together founded the Tri-DIY Bio group, and they are working with several other local folks to firmly establish the movement and the organization. With me today are Mike Lisanke, Jim Rose, and Tom Randall. Mike is an engineer who graduated from the University of Florida with a BSE in degree in computer and information science. He previously worked for IBM for 35 years and is now in the process of starting his own company in the area of the Internet of Things. Mike, welcome.
Thank you, Ernie.
And I'm glad to hear that that microphone really does work. We weren't sure until we came to you. Jim Rose is a local scientist working in the RTP area as a process development engineer at a large biopharmaceutical company. He has a master's in biotechnology from Penn State University and has also studied at Florida Atlantic and NC State. Jim, welcome to Radio In Vivo.
Thanks, Ernie.
And Tom Randall is in microbial genetics, primarily fungal genetics. He got his PhD from Michigan State University and has worked at a variety of major research universities. Local, he has worked at Syngenta Biotechnology and more recently at UNC Chapel Hill doing bioinformatics. He is currently working as a bioinformatics contractor at a local research institute, as well as trying to keep up with wet lab research projects at home in a DIY bio setting. Tom, welcome and thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Ernie.
Gentlemen, let's start the conversation by learning a little bit more about this concept in general. I gave a brief definition in the introduction, but can you provide more details about what this DIY bio activity is really all about?
So yeah, Ernie, I think you had a great intro there in terms of what it is in general. I think one of the
This is Jim.
So one of the most interesting things I think about DIY bio as a concept is that it means a lot of different things to different people. You know, generally we're trying to do what you described there with the definition. We're trying to basically bring the idea of doing science into the broader public. We're trying to allow others to have the ability to basically get their hands on some of the technology that's previously been mostly kept at universities or institutions, but now because of lowering costs is more available. And, also trying to build a community of basically open source technologies around these new things and just basically general exploration. I think, some of the things that I think are really interesting about, doing this kind of work is that you can really build a kind of cross-functional community out of it. We have Mike here who is a computer scientist and I'm a biologist, but I spend most of my time doing engineering work and Tom is a kind of more academic.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a kind of a broad spectrum of different folks with different views.
And that must make it a lot of fun, ultimately.
Yeah, definitely.
I understand that there is also a national organization devoted to DIY bio called, simply enough, DIYBio.org, which actually has approximately 4,500 members across the country. Tell us about that group and some of its activities, Tom.
Okay, I'm Tom. Basically, that is a group that was started in 2008 by Mackenzie Cowell and Jason Bobie. They just basically were interested in doing biology outside of the normal academic institutions and set up the organization website, and they set up a Google group for emailing people, and people just started joining. I mean, personally, I learned about it early 2009 when they started getting some publicity about this, and it's basically a way for all the DIY biologists in the world to communicate with each other. There is no real central organization. It's just everybody doing their own thing, either in a community setting like Jim was talking about, or in a personal, individual, home-based setting
which is the whole idea, right?
The whole idea is to... It's DIY bio is what you think it is in terms of biology, whatever type of research you're interested in doing. And so there's no real organization. It's just a group of people who are trading ideas, trading maybe recipes, trading, sometimes organisms and plasmids, or just generally how do you set up a lab? Where do you get your supplies from? Where do you get your equipment from? And so that's...
Well, one of the things I found very interesting in looking at the DIYBio.org website was that there's actually an international angle to what they're up to, working to expand laboratory science capacity in low-resource areas in the world.
Yeah, that's one avenue of DIY bio is building your own equipment, and that can be potentially very useful in underdeveloped countries where biological research equipment is quite expensive. It's expensive to buy a PCR machine. If you can build one on your own and maybe make it available, it might broaden the ability to do biological research in less developed countries where, this may be very useful in terms of medical research or understanding diseases or identifying diseases, that sort of thing.
Well, that's an interesting angle, like I say. But let's learn more about your group, Try DIY Bio. And am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Mike, how and when did Try DIY Bio get started?
It started by some posts that we made to a news group. The DIY Bio has an email list, And I posted on it that I was surprised that there wasn't already an existing do-it-yourself bio group in the Research Triangle area, because it's basically full of academia and industry in the area of biological research. And got contacted back by, I think, first Tom and then Jim, people over a period of several months posted on this board saying, well, I am in the area. So eventually there was a small group of us that said, hey, let's get together, meet face to face. Over time, we've collected people, and some also have tried to join the group and decided that it wasn't for them, or they didn't have enough interest to participate on a regular basis. But to me, everybody who's interested in doing it yourself in biology is coming together and looking for that solution to these problems Tom was talking about of cost reducing the technology and then having a place to practice.
Okay. Jim, why don't you tell us a little bit more about the mission and vision of your organization?
Sure. I mean, so I think basically our mission right now is to bring this community into the local area. We're not the first to ever come up with this idea, obviously. There are other groups like ours that have existed for a few years now in other parts of the country. But like Mike was saying, we believe that there's a great opportunity here with the type of experienced people we have in the area. It would make a lot of sense for a group like this to fit very well in the local kind of community. Really, what we're looking to do is a couple different things. First off, we want to supply the kind of experience and community aspect of the DIY bio for a local kind of chapter. That means bringing together people who are interested in the same topic, who want to know a little bit more about open source research in the biology fields and other sciences. And also kind of doing a kind of educational aspect. So there are a lot of people from different fields who may not be traditionally a biologist by training, but who are interested in biology and some of the more interesting biotechnology applications these days. And what our group can do is we can bring them together and we can hold things like workshops, activities, seminars, which can teach people kind of cross-functionally the different aspects. In order to do some of those things, one of our main goals, our mission right now, is to find a physical place. So we are using a lot of what Tom has, which is his private lab, as kind of our initial starting zone. But really what we want to do is bring this open to a public community type setting where we have one central location where others can kind of meet and we can really bring it to the community. And so the last kind of aspect then is doing some interesting projects. A lot of other groups like ours have kind of formed around some central projects where there is a particular application of biology or biotechnology which hasn't been explored yet for various reasons, but they are interested in doing it. And it's kind of a great way to do things like research competitions or get involved in doing some basic biotechnology work in a kind of group setting. And one example like that is there's a international genetically engineered machine competition every year. This actually started as a student competition, but has since opened up to be open to community labs as well. And different groups around the country have participated in recent years doing projects where they basically design genetic circuits in order to serve a certain new unique function that didn't exist previously. So ideally, we'd be doing things like that eventually as well.
I see. Sounds great. Well, Tom, let's bring you in. How many members are there in the group at the present? And give us some flavor of who some of these folks are.
Well, I think, and Jim and Mike can correct me, but I think we have we communicate primarily through a Slack space or Slack site. And I think we probably have about 50 people's emails and maybe 30 or 40 people have joined the Slack site itself. So that's mainly how we communicate.
I see.
And I forgot the rest of your question.
Kind of a flavor for the types of people who are involved.
I think a lot of people so far aren't really coming from the academic field, but more like Mike, coming out of a computational background. And that's sort of how I think the whole DIY bio thing got started was it was sort of an offshoot of makerspaces and computationally oriented people mm-hmm. who realized that, you know, biology was a system that they might want to play around with and alter. So I think a lot of people have computational background.
And which must appeal greatly to a lot of the folks in this area who have that kind of orientation.
Right. They have that background, but background they don't have is the actual biological experience in the wet lab.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing we'd like to be able to set up is a space where that can happen.
Mike?
Not to contradict you, Tom, but there have been several people that are interested in our group. I know several professors. I did some undergraduate education at NC State, non-degree in chemistry, biochemistry, and biotechnology,
mm-hmm.
and know some of the professors in the biochemistry department at NC State, and several of those people have been interested in our group. Obviously, there's a time factor, and I think the interest in academia is going to be muted to some degree until we've actually got a facility and something that can really draw people in. And I think that in general is the problem for the general public as well.
Sure.
You really have to have something that fascinates people enough to come in and really be fascinated by what's going on in order to build the membership.
So this is Jim. I think one thing, Mike, I definitely agree with you. I think what we're kind of doing in the meantime, as we work on that goal of getting our physical space set up in the first place, is working with different organizations in the area. We're really focusing on outreach right now, and so we've done a lot of outreach with different organizations. We just did an event at the NC Museum of Natural Sciences in
mm-hmm.
Raleigh.
Right.
And we had a really great time with a lot of activity of doing some different microbiome activities or using GFP painting with bacteria. And we've also partnered with a local makerspace in Durham, which has given us access to their space for the time being to hold meetings and to do a little bit of initial DIY bio work.
Okay, where is that?
So that is actually Splat Space in North Durham.
I see.
They're a really great makerspace. And I don't know if all your listeners are familiar with the idea of what a makerspace is, but I could describe it real quick.
Please.
Basically, a makerspace is an idea that's been around for a little while now in more of the computer science and hardware kind of fields. And it's the idea that there's a community space available for anyone who wants access to it, where basically the members get together and they agree to pool their resources, basically. And they can, with that, buy different pieces of equipment that may be too expensive for individual members to buy themselves.
Like 3D printers?
3D printers,
like
exactly.
Okay.
Or even woodworking, different woodworking equipment, or soldering electronics equipment. And it basically becomes this really great, vibrant community of people who just are interested in doing things. And they all get together and decide they want this thing to happen. So really, I think it's a great analogy for what we're trying to do, because we're trying to do something very similar, but with a kind of added, flair towards biology.
Sure.
So that made a lot of sense for us to start partnering with Splat Space.
So it as you work towards your own dedicated wet lab space, would you envision it being a project-based facility, or educational, or really both?
So I would say that it's a bit of both. It's definitely an aspect of what we're interested in is the project-based work. A lot of our members are really interested in getting their hands on the actual technology, because there's only so much you can learn through lectures or kind of theoretical learning. But the education is also just a big part there too, where we can hold lectures on basically cutting edge technologies that we are using, and also just the open source aspect of it, which I don't think anywhere else is really focusing on.
I see. That's going to be quite a place for people to come together and do some biology.
Yeah, we hope so.
How are you going to be able to keep it independent? For example, if you manage to acquire corporate sponsorship, for example?
Well, actually, I'm not so sure that the dependence or independence of the group is at issue at the moment. You really need, it's a chicken and egg situation, right?
Sure.
We did interview, like I said, some professors at NC State and looked at the possibility of cooperating there on campus. And I think the group is open to lots of ideas of how to get the physical location established and running. And initially, if there is a dependence and there's more of a sponsorship and you have to do some promotional for the person who's hosting you, I don't see that as a big problem. And,
okay.
But there's a community spirit of discussion on that issue of how to
imagine.
Get started.
So there's also the other aspect, which is funding via crowdsourcing. A lot of groups like ours have leveraged the kind of new crowdsourcing platforms,
mm-hmm.
Kickstarter, Indiegogo, things like that, to
sure.
basically fund their lab spaces and then their projects.
Do you have a campaign like that in progress at this point?
So we're planning on it. I think okay. we want to really build up our initial ground swell here and then use that kind of energy to promote something like that. But mm-hmm. I definitely see that being in our future.
About grants as a possibility? Are you pursuing those?
I don't think we'd not yet. I think it might require us to really have a space established to do something, just to show that we can actually do something
okay.
like that before we get a grant.
Are there other such laboratories like this, independent labs and DIY dedicated labs around the country? Are any of the other groups a little further down the road?
Just up the street in Charlottesville, Virginia,
mm-hmm.
there's a lab that just started up.
Okay.
I made a road trip up to see them, and they're established now and having regular, weekly, if it's not weekly, it's definitely a monthly program where they host an experiment and have people in. So getting the organization to the point where you're actually doing instead of talking is the important part.
Yeah, well, that is true of so many walks of life.
I think one other way of trying to get that independent funding source is members. A
mm-hmm.
lot of makerspaces and other DIY bio labs will fund their space via membership.
I see.
That could be a monthly subscription, kind of like a gym membership,
mm-hmm.
But it gives you access to the shared equipment and things like that. We're also exploring that as another potential opportunity.
I see. Tom, you had something to add?
Yeah. And there are definitely a lot of other organizations like this around the country and the world, as you mentioned before. Like New York has something called GenSpace. And that's, I think, maybe funded by the members themselves. There are several of these organizations out in the Bay Area, like BioCurious, which have been around for years.
Mm-hmm.
And doing, project-based stuff, educational-based stuff. And basically all over the country there. Things like this developing.
And internationally now, too.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Well, I'd like to, now that we kind of know about the group and what its mission and goals are, I want to get to know each one of you a little bit better individually and hear some little bit of your stories. I'd like to each one of you in turn to tell us about how you got interested in and involved with DIY Bio and the types of projects you're working on. All of that. Mike, you go first.
Okay. So my interest, I've worked at IBM and did a lot of embedded systems development, and that's very similar to what we're now calling today the Internet of Things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also similar to what people talk about in terms of the hackerspace or developing small systems to control devices and interact with the real world. I'm interested in actual doing physical experiments and actually biotechnology. I went to NC State with the wrong idea of that I was actually going to go there and get a PhD program where I would get to work on my own ideas. And that's not how PhD programs at universities work. But finding out the background of what biochemistry is about, and also going over to their BTEC organization and taking some biotech courses, really interested in me because I'm focused as an engineer on actually producing something of value from biology. I'm not as much interested in the academic study of the organisms as I am making them do stuff for us.
Mm-hmm. So you're not really a basic scientist.
Right. And so I'm looking for this organization to get to the point where we could actually host some development and have part of our projects be dedicated to within the organization, companies, small companies trying to actually do something with biotechnology. And so going to the university and attending classes gave me a little bit of a background, but now you're to the point where you need to practice it, and either you stay in an organization like a campus and continue to spend money on education, or you get out and try to do some of this stuff yourself. And so that's really my interest in do-it-yourself bio, is to, as an engineer, cost reduce the technology to the point where anybody can do it, and then get the space and the safety practices and the education of the people who actually do this stuff to help in terms of running it properly and making sure that everything works smoothly.
Every organization needs somebody just like you, the engineer. Critical.
Okay, this is Tom. I'll say something.
Sure.
I got into this basically in the early 2000s because my background is basically academics doing basic research. Mm-hmm. And one thing I started seeing was, a lot of the research was becoming very genomic, very large-scale research, lots of people, lots of labs involved. And my feeling was that the smaller research was probably going to get squeezed out in terms of funding. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what I was interested in. That's why I decided to start trying to recreate an academic type lab in a home setting where I could do smaller molecular biology and genetics on my own. So I had this idea for a while, and in the early 2000s, I realized you could buy a lot of equipment on eBay. You can buy incubators, you can buy PCR machines, centrifuges, and everything. So that got me thinking that maybe it would be possible to actually set up a lab at home, and I sort of grew on that, started buying equipment, slowly building a lab. And 2005, I basically incorporated as a nonprofit, and that's sort of my official starting point, I would guess, doing this, although I've really gone back maybe 2002 and 2003. And so until I met these guys, I was basically doing this entirely on my own at home. And so I think one of the interests I have in the TriDI Bio group is I've got a lot of experience in building a lab. I know where to get equipment, I know where to get reagents, I know I can really give them a big push in setting up a lab because I've done it myself on my own, on the cheap, and also I've got a lot of the reagents you need, I've got a lot of organisms and cloning vectors and things like that. So that was basically my reason to do this was to set up a university-type lab completely independent of the large institution. Do what I was interested in doing on a basic scientific level.
And so what types of projects, now that you're all set up and up and running in the home lab, what types of projects do you work on?
Well, mainly I'm focusing on a fungus called Neurospora crassa. It's a model system that has been used since the early 30s. Beadle and Tatum used this to develop the one gene, one protein concept at Stanford in the late 30s, early 40s, and it basically took off as a model system organism.
Mm-hmm. So it's not a yeast type fungus.
It's an Ascomycete, which is a yeast type fungus, but it's a filamentous one, whereas Saccharomyces grows like a single cell, like an E. coli. So it's related.
Okay.
They're quite related, and it's quite well established genetically. So that was my background in academia, is working with this. So I wanted to pick up some projects I had been working on and as a postdoc. And one of those projects is in terms of understanding the sexual development of this organism. Fungi, like us, have a sexual cycle. It's a lot different than what we do, but still, it's the same basic process. And I'm interested in understanding some of the genes that are involved in that. So that's one project I'm working on. I'm also trying to develop, you've probably heard of the CRISPR gene editing.
Oh, you bet.
I think your next guest is an expert on CRISPR.
Yes,
so you'll
indeed.
Be hearing a lot about
next
that.
Week.
I'm trying to set up a Neurospora strain with a Cas9 gene so that I can actually do CRISPR analysis on my own at home.
I see.
Because some of my other projects, I'm very interested in knocking out specific genes and looking at their function, and obviously this is going to be the way to go in the future.
Absolutely. Well, Jim, tell us about your project.
Sure.
Yeah. Story.
So my background, how I got into DIY Bio is really, I did a really interesting program when I was in the university. It was a research competition in synthetic biology which I think I described before, the iGEM International Genetically Engineered Machine Competition.
Mm-hmm. And we'll have a link on,
yes,
the website.
Yes. It's a great competition. Basically, one of the leading frontiers in synthetic biology, where you can basically design projects and compete over the course of a few months. And through that organization, I got to meet some other members of different DOI bio labs, one in New York, and others, and I got to really hear about the idea. But at that point, it didn't really seem like, you know, that where what I needed to do right then, because I had that kind of outlet through the university studies I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Since graduating from college, I then went to work at a large biotechnology company. I do a lot of process development, which is basically cell culture, growing and producing protein therapeutics via bioreactors. And it's
so
a great...
You're making biologics.
Yes, exactly. Okay. It's still very much tied into the science, but it has a very applied aspect of it, a very focused industrial type mode of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I found one of the things I felt like was lacking in my daily kind of work was just a chance to explore interesting ideas and do some of the really cutting edge molecular biology that maybe wasn't my exact job function or the actual, type of thing my company was trying to pursue at the moment. So I really started looking around after moving to the area for a similar group. And as Mike kind of described, where there wasn't one, and so we decided if I couldn't join one, we have to make it. And so we're trying to make, we basically are looking at that. As the thing I'm interested in is finding a kind of outlet for the kind of ideas I have in synthetic biology, maybe getting back to the point where we can compete in the similar competition to iGEM again.
Mm-hmm.
With our lab, and basically building a community, connecting others around it. And I think that and then the education aspect, which is very much a volunteering type role, is something I'm very interested in as well.
Great. Well, from each of your own individual descriptions, it sounds like there's probably, orders of magnitude people out there coming from a similar orientation. So I bet your group is going to be growing substantially over the next few years. Wanted to ask a little bit more. You've kind of alluded to this already, Tom, particularly about how you get your equipment and supplies and software. The standard orientation is that that stuff is all terribly expensive. How can you really acquire viable equipment to conduct DIY bio projects in the garage or the kitchen or the spare bedroom, as it were?
Well, this is Tom again. One, I did mention the eBay thing. A lot of equipment is on eBay. Another thing is that a lot of pharmaceutical companies occasionally downsize.
Okay.
Like GlaxoSmithKline recently laid off a lot of R&D people. Last September, they had an auction of a lot of their equipment from mass specs down to pipettement.
Wow.
And we bought about a dozen pipettement from Glaxo. And a couple other things like a vortexer, a mixer, and just some small equipment.
Sure.
So that's one way to source
it. You get to sit there and say, this stuff helped make Zantac or
right,
whatever.
Right, right. So we're just picking up the pieces of Glaxo, basically.
Indeed.
That's one way to do it.
Okay.
I mean, eBay, I think, is the main way. In terms of
what about local surplus outlets like Duke Surplus, UNC Surplus?
Yeah, that's something we really haven't explored yet, but that would be a good way.
I can say one thing that is a really great resource in the local area is the Scrap Exchange in Durham.
I don't know
if you're aware of it.
One of my relatives used to work there.
Oh, great. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a wonderful place where you can basically buy anything you can imagine that has been donated to them. And they have a very large section of lab equipment, believe it or not. A lot of stuff like Tom was describing, some of it ends up there. And so that's one place you can also access some of these materials.
Now, what about sources of, you mentioned open source software. That must be critical. Mike, you're raising your hand there.
There's a lot of groups in the area that meet and talk about technology. And some of them, for instance, the Try Embed group, and there's IEEE groups that talk about robotics and, in general, components and electronics and how to assemble your own circuits. And you might think it's all software. Actually, I think as a computer scientist, as a programmer, that the software is the simpler part. Getting a hold of the software is usually a matter of just exploring the internet and finding the right open source group that is interested in the same aspects that you are. They've created a library that you can start taking advantage of. And then you can contribute back to that organization and extend their software. And that's the nice thing about open source software. Now there's a movement to do open hardware. And open hardware is, to me, even more interesting in the area of the Internet of Things, in my business model, but also in the area of do-it-yourself bio, because we're looking at cost reducing what is the simple physics sometimes of the apparatus that's used in biotech from many hundreds of thousands of dollars or, you know, $50,000 to something that is affordable at the $1,000 or less range. And those circuits can be produced.
Okay. Well, from what each of you describe, it sounds like all the scrounging and repairing and finding bargains is really part of the fun of DIY bio itself, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. And one thing we haven't mentioned, in biology, you need a lot of chemicals and reagents.
Indeed.
And that's also a difficult thing to source.
I'm glad you went back to that, because I had a question about that.
Large companies like Fisher, Sigma, New England Biolabs, who sell molecular biology reagents, they're not going to sell to you at home.
Really?
But there are smaller places that will sell you chemicals and reagents, like chemsavers.org. They have a lot of quality chemicals. I often go through an organization called Boston Bioproducts. They will sell stuff directly to your house, or they will sell you stuff. You don't have to have an academic institution address. There are companies out there like IDT, which will sell you primers. They will sequence DNA for you. MWG Operon, same thing. They'll sell you primers. They'll do DNA synthesis and even genomes for you. So there are a lot of groups out there that will deal with you, even if you don't have an affiliation.
Well, I had a question prepared about that I want to skip to. I want to spend a good bit of time talking about safety, because that's certainly important here. But you mentioned, that these materials can be acquired and you don't need anything more than an address and a credit card. Is there any danger in that? I mean, could all of this be used for ill purposes in the wrong hands?
Well, one thing that I think everybody in the DIY biosphere understands is that we should be staying at a very simple level in terms of safety.
Mm-hmm.
Using only organisms that are not pathogenic, staying at a biosafety one level, not working with animals, not working with human subjects, that sort of thing.
And
we can't get radioactive isotopes, things like that. Really, I don't think it is a problem, simply because anything that's potentially dangerous is already regulated and hard to get. You can't just go get a pathogenic organism. The government's going to know about that.
Okay. So I don't need to worry about my next-door neighbor, unleashing a superbug on the neighborhood or anything like that.
Well, I think the problem with that is that you're putting yourself at risk first if you even tried that.
Sure.
Nobody in DIY bio is set up with a lab that's secure enough to do something like that. So if you even wanted to do that, you're probably going to kill yourself first.
Right.
So it's self-interest.
Okay, Jim?
I think another interesting thing about really the purpose of having a community-based lab for this is that it really makes all of it out in the open. We're trying to create a very transparent group where the things that we're doing are all publicly available, known, and the different members of the group are all peers that can actively watch and know what people are doing. And that way, basically in that kind of transparent environment, if you have anybody who would be trying to do something nefarious or something along those lines, it would be easily spotted and actually identified probably much more quickly than any other way possible.
Okay, I feel better now that you've reassured me on that point. But I would think also that having that community space, you can enforce the appropriate standards and safety procedures.
Yeah, well, I think, this is Tom again, I think part of setting this up would be training people to do in the right way to manage the organisms you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want somebody hurting themselves. You don't want somebody hurting everybody else in the lab, and we are probably going to be attracting some people who do not have a lot of wet lab background. So anyone coming into our group, we're going to have to make sure they're trained. Like at Splat Space, they have a lot of woodworking work. I wouldn't want to use a bandsaw unless somebody showed me how to use it.
Sure.
So all these DIY activities have potentially dangerous equipment that you just have to understand. It's not just biology. You know, I wouldn't want to use a laser cutter. I mean, right. So unless someone showed me how to do it, you know, so.
Well, the folks that do this and like yourself, Tom, who have lab spaces in a private setting, is there any actual regulation as far as folks working in their own home or private spaces?
Not that I know of in this country.
Okay.
I think people have looked into this before. I know there was somebody with a legal background of BioCurious years ago asked this question. And apparently, as long as you're staying in a biosafety level one with using commonly used organisms, there is no regulation. Okay. The situation is different in the EU. Doing genetic engineering, doing modifications, is very regulated in some European countries. So it's a completely different environment over there and much harder to do some things.
Interesting. What about legal issues involved with this, either in the private setting or the community space? Are there liability issues that you have to address?
Not that I know of. I haven't really looked into it that much.
Okay.
But I don't think there is any.
You haven't consulted your insurance agent, I take.
No.
Okay.
But I really don't think there is.
Okay.
I mean, this is such a new area that I think not a lot of people know about it.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I do know that as far as community lab would go, there are different insurances you can get. Makerspaces have similar type, you know, setups where they're insured for basically the activities that are done through that. And there are open source wikis and basically things that directly on how to get that set up and organized their correct way. So there's definitely an agreement that members sign,
mm-hmm.
Basically looking at liability and things of that nature, as with anything that you're trying to do that has some parts of risk involved, like woodworking or metalworking. So we'd imagine doing something very similar for our group.
I see. Well, that makes perfect sense. I want to turn now to outreach and advancing STEM education, which appear to be integral parts of your group. Tell us about that aspect of your mission. Mike, we haven't heard from you for a while. Why don't you address that?
Sure. You know, Ernie, that I attend the Sigma Chi and American Scientist lunch where they host a scientist.
And don't forget Science Communicators of North Carolina.
Scientist Communicators of North Carolina. So right now, as a small group, I don't think any one of us has the experience to go out and promote a do-it-yourself bio group, but we're learning. And hopefully we learn fast how to communicate with the right people. We're hoping your connection on your radio show and the research at the museum and the STEM presentation, the SciTech that we just attended,
mm-hmm.
are all going to be a momentum-building process where people first become aware of us, they become interested in us, and then the feedback loop starts building. And what I've noticed is that people right now are finding us only on the internet through our webpage. And they're coming in and they're saying, hey, I just graduated, or I'm still a student, or I'm a lawyer in intellectual property. And we've had these inquiries about our group. We've sent them invites to join our Slack community and communicate with us. And now we're a loose federation of people who have a general interest. But we're interested in working with all the organizations who would be interested in promoting us. And, you know, that feedback loop, I think, is not only do we get the benefit, but so do they in promoting their organization as well.
Yes, Jim.
So I think in terms of STEM outreach and kind of things along those lines, more than what I guess Mike was talking about, which was gaining membership and outreach, what we're thinking on is kind of a short-term and a long-term type strategy. In the short term, it's a lot of partnering with different organizations that are already established. We partnered with the museum recently for the expo event, which we had a really great time at.
Which was part of the North Carolina Science Festival.
Exactly, yes. And we're basically able to provide expertise in these areas of doing ultra-low-cost biology experiments for children or even adult education. We're looking at it with a couple of other organizations as well, which would allow us to basically do that in the short term. In the long term, what we could envision is actually holding a seminars in our own space and having, you know, whether it's high school or level or you know, college level or something, or adult level, having kind of educational activities where people can come into our lab and get their hands on some of this technology and learn about it. And I think that's, it's only going to be a great thing as far as broadening the understanding of science. And really, we can do some more interesting long-term type projects in a kind of independently funded lab space, where we could be, you know, mentors for maybe a kid in high school or something along that, or summer programs, things along those natures, which I think would be great for kind of increasing scientific literacy a little bit.
Well, also here, just here, right here in the Research Triangle area, you've got entities like the School of Science and Math and Research Triangle High School, which is now out in what used to be the Sigma's Eye building out on 54, that I would think would be all over something like this, that to have their kids would have an opportunity to practice some real hands-on science education.
Yeah, there's a lot of interest from schools of getting contact with these programs, which they don't have the resources to kind of develop themselves. We're actually looking into developing curricula that we could do maybe as kind of a bring-to-the-school type activity or things like that, which would be, I think, very interesting to partner with local schools with.
Absolutely. Well, is part of the idea here to kind of demystify science in a way? Is that part of the mission?
Tom, I think that's part of it. I think something is talked about a lot, and this is the whole idea of democratizing science, making it available to more people. Some people in this movement, not myself really, because I've been in academia, some people think academia is a pretty much a closed system. It's very hard to get into.
Yeah.
You have to really commit yourself, and it's just, you can't have you don't have access to a lot of this stuff. And part of the DIY bio movement is to take what's there and bring it out to more people, allow people to see what's really going on, allow them to actually, you know, streak a plate or run a gel or something that they may have heard about. And that, I think, would go a long way to demystifying science if they actually see it happening. I mean, I think that sort of happened in our SciTech Out Expo this last weekend. I mean, kids got to put their hand on a petri plate and streak out their finger and see what grew up. You know? So they're going to see their own biology, that sort of thing.
So this really interfaces with the whole citizen science movement as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, this is Jim. I mean, I think citizen science is a very similar type activity of what we're doing. I think there are some key differences, though, in what we're doing as well from citizen science. I guess the idea of citizen science was traditionally maybe someone with a more academic background would have a question, but maybe not the resources to answer that question without reaching out to the broader public. And they realized, I think, throughout the past couple decades, that reaching out to the public who is fairly well educated in this stuff, they can get a lot more done with the resources of kind of the citizens. What we're trying to do, which I think is very similar and kind of an odd cousin of that, is we're trying to empower the citizens themselves to be the ones to ask the questions. And I think that can lead to even more interesting research on the.
Yeah, this time I have a comment too.
Sure.
A few weeks ago at Duke, there was an actual symposium Saturday on citizen science and ecology and the environment. I went to that, and it was interesting because personally, I didn't know a lot about citizen science, so it was a good opportunity to find out about it.
Even though you were practicing it,
I'm in a way practicing it, but it's a little bit different, citizen science, because it seems to be mainly organized by the academics using people out there in the environment to, you know, generate data. Like apparently bird watching is very, very popular. So you can get people around the country looking at a specific type of bird and following the migrations, and that's just millions of data points that then the academic science go back, put together, and study migrations, maybe how temperature has effect or climate has an effect on migrations of birds. So it seems to be mainly research directed by the academics using citizens.
I think that brings up another interesting way to think about us as kind of the Amateur Birdwatcher Association of Biotechnology.
So. Yes, Mike.
You recall not this month, but the previous month, Dr. Holly Menninger from the NC State.
And anyone interested can go back a little ways and listen to her appearance on Radio In Vivo recently.
Excellent. And so she was at the Duke presentation, and she's obviously now the spokesperson for citizen science. We're hoping that citizen science isn't just scientists at the university level in the laboratories enrolling people to collect their samples. We're hoping that citizen science gets turned around and becomes science being done by the citizen.
Absolutely. Well, I wanted to ask before we run out of time, have any significant achievements or notable publications emerged from DIY Bio at this point? Or is that really the wrong question to ask in this context?
I don't think that any really significant ones have yet emerged just because it's so new. But some people don't have that focus of publishing. You know, some people just want to do the science. At home, my focus would be that, publishing.
Okay.
I'm interested in trying to get things published.
Now, was the video I saw on the website, was that your lab?
That is my lab, yes.
And it's literally a spare bedroom, right?
It is the master bedroom. It has a...
And you're in the spare bedroom.
I'm in the spare bedroom, unfortunately. But okay. The master bedroom has a bathroom attached, and that's very good for media prep. You have a water source, and you can pour your plates and that sort of thing. So I specifically moved to a three-bedroom townhouse for that reason.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jim?
So I think going back to your question about, kind of the outcome so far of DIY Biology, it's been a little slower on the publication side in some of the more established journals. I think they're still, like Tom is saying, getting used to the idea of research coming from other places. But really, if you look at kind of the open source contributions, one of the most famous ones is something called the Open PCR Project.
Mm-hmm.
And this was basically an idea that came out of a community lab in San Francisco where they were basically open source designing a thermocycler unit for using with PCR. And they were able to reduce the cost of what is basically sold proprietarily through companies from a few thousand dollars to around $700 kit, which you can buy from them, or open source specs, which you can design yourself and build using the pieces you can find on your own. So I think that's one of the great successes. There have been other projects like that, looking at things like the Glowing Plant Project was recently funded a couple years ago via Kickstarter, and I think they raised an amazing amount of money, around $500,000 actually,
okay,
to fund their project of creating glow-in-the-dark plants. And that was also out of a community lab. There's other examples of projects in progress like that, things like Open Insulin Project, where it's basically like an open source insulin production, which I think is very interesting. With the kind of background in biologics production myself, I know the challenges of that project.
I'm sure.
And things along that nature. I mean, there's a group trying to create real vegan cheese by having yeast produce milk proteins, and therefore it's not animal derived in any way. So.
Yeah, very cool. So it's more achievement-oriented, really, than publications and things. That's more in the academic world, I'm sure.
I think, depending on the people, it could be also publications. It's just maybe a few more years to come.
Okay. Well, being free of the institutional constraints, which each of you have talked about in some fashion, does DIY Bio have any inherent advantages or disadvantages?
Is Tom. Well, I think some of the disadvantages are that you aren't associated with large institutions and all that comes with it.
Mm-hmm.
All the equipment, all the media, autoclaves, all the just routine, cold rooms, warm rooms, all the infrastructure that comes with the university is something you have to either build or live without. It's very hard to have a minus 80 freezer in your house. That's energy intensive.
Really?
So I don't have one, actually. So you have to be limited on certain things, and that goes with the whole biosafety level one thing. You have to limit yourself somewhat. I think some of the advantages are that you are free of all the bureaucracy and the administration that goes along with any large institution. I don't have to listen to a chancellor or a department head. I don't have to be on committees.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to write grants, although I might want to write grants.
You don't have to teach.
I don't have to teach, although we are going to be doing some teaching in context of Try DIY Bio in terms of just teaching people how to do biologic research. So there will be some teaching, but it'll be voluntary, obviously. Mm-hmm. So, and you don't have to train students or pay them.
Right. Yeah, that's an excellent point. Well, is there any opportunity for collaboration or cooperation with academic, governmental, or corporate entities? For example, could you, you know, share some resources or access core facilities or things like that?
This is Tom again. I think there would be interest in collaboration if somebody in an academic institution is working on a project related to you. Like I mentioned, I'm working on fungal genetics. So if there is an academic institution doing a similar thing, I could very easily see trading reagents and strains with them. Getting access to core facilities or something like that, I think that's probably not going to happen because you're not part of the institution.
Indeed.
So that's going to be very difficult.
This is Jim. One thing I want to say is I do know that we are in talks with some organizations on kind of the STEM aspect where we can provide kind of the expertise for developing curricula with kind of, you know, quick, interesting activities for students. So that's one opportunity for collaboration.
I see. Well, Mike, Tom, and Jim, it's been a great hour. It has flown by, as usual. And I wish you all the best for continued growth and success with Try DIY Bio.
Thanks, Ernie.
Thanks, Ernie.
We've got some great guests lined up in the coming weeks here on Radio In Vivo. You can check the website, radioinvivo.net, or our Facebook site for our lineup of upcoming shows. So join us again next time for Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science community, right here on volunteer-powered WCOM-FM, Carborough and Chapel Hill. If you enjoy the program, we ask that you please make an effort to support the station by volunteering, contributing, or underwriting our programming. And now be sure to stay tuned for one of our most popular shows on the WCOM schedule, The Courage Cocktail with Leanne McClymont. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time.